generous support for Coastal Windage comes from Cameron's Restaurant Pub and Inn, and now RV Park. Cameron's is the only true British pub on the coastside, featuring 19 beers on tap and more than 60 brands of bottles. Come for the food and stay for the fun. Happy hour specials Monday through Friday. Open mic night on Thursday and karaoke on Friday and Saturday. Cameron's Restaurant Pub in Half Moon Bay.
Broadcasting live from the KHMB studios in downtown Half Moon Bay. This is Coastal Windage, the talk of the coast. The Coastside's own live call-in talk radio show. From Pescadero to Pacifica and beyond, this is the place for Coastside issues, hot topics, and you. And now, the host of Coastal Windage, Mr. Ruben Truthmaker, and his co-host, Crystal Ann.
All right. Okay. All right. Well.
Okay, Frank.
Okay.
So
I know the live studio audience is crazy this morning. Okay. Something in the air. But we appreciate them coming to the studio here in the elevated viewing gallery. Good morning, Coastsiders. This is Coastal Windage. It's Friday, January 30th, 2026. I'm Ruben. This is Crystalline.
Good morning.
And with us today, we have Sarah Lomax from the Coastside Community Orchestra. Good morning, Sarah.
Good morning, everybody.
Speaking of live performances, we're going to be talking to Sarah about her career, about Coastside Community Orchestra, and about their upcoming chamber performance. So live performances and culture and art and beauty are kind of the focus of today's show. Okay, so speaking of that, here's our topics: the beauty and art of the Coastside, NIMBY, the abbreviation / acronym. Some people call it an acronym. If it's letters that, you know, are standing in for words, and it's a word that you say like NIMBY, it's actually called an abbreviation. An acronym would be like CIA, where it's not a word, it's a three letters that you say together. And there is your editorial tip for today. Thank you. We'll be here all week. Okay. And then in the back half of the show, we'll have our Shooting the Breeze live interview with Sarah Lomax, co-founder and assistant conductor of the Coastside Community Orchestra, and by all accounts, a nifty little flautist. Flautist or flutist?
Depends on which country you're from. If you're from Germany, it's a flautist. But I'll go by anything. I'm a fluter. I'm whatever you want.
Okay. I have heard that one. Okay, I kind of like that. Okay, this is Coastal Windage. I think you know that. We're here every Friday morning, 9 to 10 a.m. live, right here on Main Street. 100.9 FM, rockin' 1710 AM, streaming live right now to anywhere in the world with an internet connection on khmbradio.com. Coastside Issues, Hot Topics, and you and me, Crystalline, and that makes us. Okay, here's the number to call if you want to talk to Sarah or about any of our topics, 650-560-9851. Okay, let's get to the air quality report. Speaking of beautiful things and amazing things, we have amazing air quality here, and it's amazing that we are still the only station that provides live, real-time air quality reports. We don't bother with traffic and weather. That's been done for 100 years. We're on the cutting edge. Okay, so 0 to 50 is incredible on the scale of air quality. 51 to 100 is pretty good. Beyond that, we're not interested. Doesn't matter. It's irrelevant to us here on the wonderful Coastside, where we have our Buenos Aires. All right, today in El Granada, 15, 6 in Half Moon Bay, nice job, Half Moon Bay, 28 in Redwood City, 20 in Santa Cruz, and our Easter Egg location. If anybody wants to call in for the windage box and you can figure out why we have this location, do it. We still got windage bucks. They're around here somewhere. These are real things with real value in the community, $100 worth of discounts at over 13 local businesses, including Cameron's and Half Moon Bay Brewing Company, and La Costanera. Come on. All right, the Easter egg location today is Kansas City, Missouri. 58 today in Kansas City, Missouri. All right, if you can figure out why we have Kansas City, Missouri in there, give us a call. You have to listen to the show. That's part of the fun of it. Okay, kind of updating from last week, we talked about Coastside Circuits, which is the robotics team for the middle school. They had a big event last weekend. I was able to talk to Jen and Franz Dill, and they said the turnout was amazing.
Aww.
That the whole thing, that it's just like huge energy there. Everybody was into it. Lots of teams. They couldn't have hoped for better. So they're super excited because coming up on March 7th in the Event Center here on Kelly, they're going to have the high school robotic competition. So go check that out. It's pretty cool. Okay, so we're talking about art and beauty on the coast side. I mean, things like the environment. Let's just start with that as an inspiration for art on the coast side is the environment, the beauty of the environment, the sunsets, the ocean, the animals. What a daily joy for me. Something that still, I'm not sure why it tickles me so much, but when I see a great blue heron, like walking or flying, flying's pretty special, but usually standing there, right, looking at the ground, waiting to get a gopher. It just gives me a thrill still every time I see it. I just love these birds and the fact that they're walking around, sometimes 5 feet from the edge of the road, just standing there, or in somebody's yard, or on somebody's roof. They're amazing. So that's part of what we get. The yellow flowers that are out at this time of year that are just everywhere. The green hillsides that are not covered with homes. The air quality. These are all part of the beauty of the coastside. That's probably reasons why we all live here. You know, some people, maybe they were born here, but a lot of people come here, and we'll talk about that in the NIMBY segment, but a lot of people come here because it's just so amazing here. And the beauty of the coastside is very inspiring to local artists, and we've had many of those local artists on the show. We've had a show about the Colony of Coastside Artists when they have their open house, which is like 50-plus artists that have studios up and down the coastside, and there's a day each year where they open their studios. You can go and check out all their different kinds of artwork. We've had Julie Engelman on the show many times. She's an amazing, what do you call it, graphic artist, painter?
Muralist,
thank you, who does amazing murals, including the one on Cunha's store here at Kelly in Maine and the one on the IDES Hall. Jill Quigley, we've had her on. She makes sea glass jewelry and other cool items out of sea glass. Julie Mell, who is into films and has started the Beach Break Film Festival. Sean Harris, an award-winning illustrator. When Sean was here, he brought one of his books and gave it to us. And it's like, I mean, I'm going to say it's like a graphic novel in that, like, every page was just covered with his illustrations, and it's just so amazing. I'm definitely visually drawn to that kind of stuff. So Martin Gallagher, we found on the show, is a woodwork sculptor. I was just in Quarry Park yesterday walking my dog and checked out Henry the Troll. Have you seen Henry the Troll in Quarry Park, Sarah?
I have not. No.
Okay, so do you know about the big, like, 15-foot-tall wooden trolls that they had in Filoli? Filoli over the hill, this
state. Right.
Last year they had, like, an installation of these big 15-foot wooden trolls that this guy had built. And it inspired a local coastsider to build a local version of these trolls. So there's about, I would say Henry's about 10 feet tall, maybe 12 feet tall. Yeah. So he's built one of these trolls in Quarry Park. And so it's very cool. We have our own troll there. And other guests, Natalie Down, we've had on the show. She makes pottery on the coastside. So I just really appreciate the coastside artists. And today we have another coastside artist, a music maker, Sarah Lomax, your assistant conductor. We already said this, founding member.
Right.
And flutist. So we'll talk about when we get to the back half of the show. I'm curious. I know you play previously published music, but I'm curious if there's any way the beauty of the coastside influences the music of the orchestra or the musicians that are in the orchestra. Think about that. Put that in your hat. Okay. Here's some other things that, in my opinion, fall into the art and beauty category. And maybe it's a stretch, but I don't think so. Okay. I want to mention that Blue Blanket Improv. I was thinking of a beach break. Blue. There's too many bees here. Okay. Blue Blanket Improv, which is a local professional improv troupe. These are folks that practice weekly and then put on show once a month here on the coastside and donate all the money they make to various scholarships and nonprofits. Anyways, they're having tryouts on February 26th at 7 p.m. at 925 Main Street in Half Moon Bay. Everybody's welcome. Ages 16 and up, because you have to, sometimes you have to go to shows, and so you can, it's just too difficult to have kids. The thing about Blue Blanket is they don't do any, like, swearing or any vulgarity or any, like, sex stuff or anything. It, so the 16 plus age is just about travel and making it easier to work without having parents involved and rides and whatever. Previous improv experience is a plus, but not required. Some acting or performance experience expected. Blue Blank has been on the Coast Side since about 2007. It is a professional troupe. They do charge entry for shows. Like I said, all the money goes to scholarships and supporting other nonprofits. The thing about Blue Blanket and improv, I was in Blue Blanket for 5 years. It was very fun. Yep. Is it really teaches, it's very fun. It's very fun because it's like you're playing with, you're literally playing with people. You're doing scenes that have some structure to them, just to kind of like add structure. I mean, that makes sense, right? To add structure, but it's improv on that. You get a couple of scene suggestions that go into the structure, and then you're off. And what can you make out of that? And so it teaches, also teaches great life skills, like accepting the thing.
Yes, and
the thing about, so Mark Samuels is the founder and leader of Blue Blanket, and I've known Mark for 25 years, and this is the sentence, the quote from Mark that that I hear his voice all the time, when, because, you know, people have always, and myself included, you know, we can't do that, I can't, and this is Mark's line that just is, resonates in my head. Sure you can. Mm-hmm. He's all, that's what he's always saying, and that's part of improv. Yes, and accepting. You don't negate in a scene. Somebody says, "Hey, let's go over to the ice cream shop." No, you know, I want, no. You've just, you, somebody gave you an offer. Let's go to the ice cream shop. Your answer is yes, and I'm going to get a double cone with sprinkles and, you know, and lobster on it, type of thing.
And it also, in the skills department, encourages quick wit. Right,
yes,
so it gets your brain thinking very, very fast. And
cooperation and teamwork.
Yeah.
Got it. Because you don't know what that person's going to say.
And it really helps, like, if somebody is an overthinker, because you have to come up with some, with stuff so fast, like, you can't overthink something because you'll kill the scene. So there's a lot of fun there. And then something similar to what the quote that you just said is that when I maybe 15 years ago, I was worried about asking for a raise, and somebody was like, well, why? And it's like, you know, come up with all these reasons for why not, and then it's like, oh, well, what's the worst thing that could happen? They could say no. And then it was like, well, is that gonna kill you? No. How does that, what's the negative impact? You just have an answer and you can move on. Like, improv helps you, like, learn how to move on and just say yes. And that's, it actually will go out into the rest of your life if you do improv. It's really cool. I think it's really awesome. Every comedian that you probably love,
yes,
has a background in improv.
Yes, because you have to have that flexibility. It's kind of like doing a crossword puzzle, in the sense that when you're doing a crossword puzzle, you have to have flexibility in mind, because the clue that you're given is purposely given so that it could be read several different ways. And if you're locked in on one of those ways, and sometimes it even baits you into putting the wrong answer in, and then it, then to like all the ones, all the clues around it, and like nothing's working here. So you have to have flexibility of mind to come at things from different angles. And that is definitely something I like about the improv.
And you can't be rigid.
You cannot be rigid. You have to be flexible, and that's where cooperation and teamwork come in. It also, per the salary thing, it builds confidence.
Yeah.
Like, you're up there on stage without a script. Somebody says, okay, toilet bowl and elephant are the scene suggestions. Go. There's a scene where it's called like 101 something or something like that, where it's literally like all the troop members are lined up, and you just have to like instantly step forward and go, 101 elephants walk into a room, and you know, boy, are their wings tired or whatever. Like, you just have to, and then like you step back, and somebody's got to step out immediately, mm-hmm. and you can't have be thinking like, oh, I'm going to do this line, mm-hmm. because inevitably the person right before you says something similar, or you forget it half. You got to trust yourself and let it flow.
And it also helps with the skill of get over it.
Like, right. And over yourself. Get over yourself.
Because if you, you know, how often, well, especially us overthinkers, like, replay the conversation that they had with so-and-so earlier this day, and it's like, oh, I said this, but I should have said this, and da-da-da. In improv, you don't have time to even deal with that. You have to accept what you said, how you said it, why you said it, or whatever, and you just have to move on, and you have to get over it. And that is a very good skill also.
Yeah, it is a good skill. Sarah, so
yes.
Classical orchestra music, I mean, one thing I like about when I go to see live music, it's usually rock or pop or something, is that it's usually not exactly the recording that you've heard on the radio. There's improv, there's, you know, guitar solos or whatever that are unscripted or loose. But that's not really how it goes for an orchestra, right? Like, since there's so many players, you got to be literally on the same page.
Absolutely. You know, I think a lot of the thrill for live concerts is the visual of watching musicians at their craft and just watching the kind of magic they can make. And I think with the recording versus live performance, that's really missing with live with recordings. So I think that plus there's a lot of nuance that comes from the sound in a particular setting, depending on the acoustics, of course. But no, I would prefer live concerts over recordings anytime. I just went to see the San Francisco Symphony live rehearsal, and it just their open rehearsal on Thursday mornings, and it's just such a thrill to watch the musicians at work and to watch the conductors work with them. But that's hard to beat.
Yeah.
And musicians are so joyful, which is also
sometimes.
Yeah, like I don't know if that's 100% across the. Isn't there some like, you know, like, I don't know, I just have some vision of a violinist just like, you know, like pouring out their personal demons and like the, you know.
You're talking
about like the devil comes down to Georgia? Jeez.
Also, you're talking
about
a music teacher. I had 33 years with kids teaching them instruments, and they're. It's not always joy.
Okay, sorry, not people who are having to take the class.
Forced to, yes.
But like often when, you know, I'll see videos of concerts or the different things, and it's just when they, you know, they just look so into it, right? Like it, but in a concentrated way. But it's like joyful concentration. It feels like it exudes through the music.
Here's my own projection because, well, one, I have not a iota of musical ability. For example, my stepdad has the ear, right? He can hear a song. He's really a great musician, guitar, any stringed instrument. He's also a singer. And he can just instantly, like, oh, that song? You know, ting, 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 ting. Oh, here it is. No. I remember when I was trying to learn a string instrument, like, the tuning, you know, somebody would be like, okay, you listen, din, din, din. No. It all sounded the same to me. I couldn't tell the difference. It was not a good experience for me, music-wise. And I forget where I was going with this topic, so let's move on. Okay. More beautiful things, beautiful people that we have here on the Coastside. For example, Coastside Allies, which is a local kind of community advocacy group, is hosting a community vigil tomorrow. Quote, to stand in solidarity and remembrance of those who have lost their lives during the recent immigration enforcement activities. This vigil, community vigil, is happening from 4:30 to 5:30 p.m. tomorrow on the corner of Alhambra and Obispo Road in El Granada. Activities include sharing space with local Coastside neighbors. There's going to be an inspiring panel of speakers, and I'm just having the interns bring over to me Kevin S., people know Kevin S. from the show, from Midcoast Community Council, has provided some updates. He said they're going to have a nice speaker lineup, a poet, a mom, nurse, and members of our Latino community, as well as Kevin himself. 14-year-old local Mira will be singing One Day by Mattis Yahoo. I'm sorry, I don't know that. But so we're going to have a 14-year-old doing a live performance of singing, so that's pretty cool. So check that out. That's 4:30 to 5:30 tomorrow. Participants are invited to bring flowers and signs promoting healing and peace, and organizers have asked, please, no political signage. So this is not a No Kings protest. This is not a, you know, an ICE get out per se. It's a community vigil for remembrance, solidarity, and hopefully community healing. Okay, positive stuff. Here's another example of beautiful people on the coast side. Local Alexis Padron is organizing a nature journaling meetup. Are you a journaler, Crystalyn?
No.
Sarah, journaling?
No, I'm not.
Diary? I mean, is that the same thing? Journaling and diarying are the same thing? Yeah, me neither. I could never.
I sit in my thoughts enough as it is. I don't need to write them down.
Well, maybe you could get them out of your head if you know, that's right. Just get them out of there.
I'll overthink what I wrote, how I wrote it, what did my handwriting look like.
Oh, dear. Okay. Well, Alexis is organizing this journaling meetup Sunday, February 1st. So that's this Sunday. I guess this weekend, from 1 to 3 at 300 Coral Reef Avenue in El Granada. That's the kind of the, I'm going to call it a parking area. It's at the top of Coral Reef. If you're familiar with that road, it comes off of Highway 1 and it goes up, 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 and then it hits a 90-degree right angle, becomes Sevilla, going back into El Granada. And there's kind of a large area there where people park. That's where the meetup is. And Alexis said they're not going up into the GGNRA area, up into the hillside. They're going down into the six-acre open space that recently was rezoned for the high-density housing. So enjoy that space now, hopefully. We'll talk more about that space later in the show. But so Alexis says, you know, bring something to write in, a notebook, something to write with. She'll give a little overview in the first 20 minutes. I'm not sure what overview you need for journaling, but, you know, like, so it sounds kind of cool, and it's a great idea. And again, like, anything that can get people out into the nature, appreciating the nature, and maybe even connecting with their own thoughts, that's also great. Speaking of that open space, Xerxes, which is a organization, a conservation group focused on monarch butterflies, has posted some signs in that open space. We mentioned the monarch butterflies, this open space in Xerxes, in our December 12th show. We're talking about the 6 acres of open space bounded by Sonora, Coral Reef, and Sevilla Roads in El Granada that was, as I said, recently rezoned for high-density housing, because heaven forbid there be open space or a place for owls, coyotes, monarch butterflies. Heaven forbid there be any open space left available. We must fill. Early records from the Xerxes Conservation Group describe these specific trees, these eucalyptus trees in this zone, in this parcel, as so heavily clustered with monarch butterflies in the past, like the 80s, that the trees appeared orange, that they glowed orange, because there's so many of these butterflies there. I've walked through there the last couple of weeks. I see maybe a couple of butterflies floating around. So it's very, very troubling. The site has been, that specific site has been verified and documented as an overwintering location for monarchs since 1988. But monarch butterflies are in serious decline, threatened by habitat loss and pesticide pollution. Their population has fallen from millions in the 80s to fewer than 8,000. These are insects. Fewer than 8,000 monarch butterflies. Humans, what are you doing to the world? We're going to have Melissa McNaughton, who is affiliated with Xerxes, on our February 13th show coming up to talk about specifically about monarch habitat on the coastside and throughout coastal California. People, millions to 8,000. We're not talking condors or mountain lions. We're talking insects. There's only 8,000 of these insects left. Warning flag. Warning. 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 Okay. What do we got? 3 minutes. Let's do a couple of emails, and then I guess we'll kick NIMBY to another show because we want to get to Sarah. But let's get a couple of emails to fill this time. How much time do we have, Noah? 3 minutes. Perfect. That we can get 14 emails in. Okay. So the emails, as listener know, I just have the interns go and grab random emails out of the bags there. So we don't know what we're going to get. Here we go. This one's from Redheaded Step Stool. Oh. Yikes. Subject line, Phil Plath, who was our guest last week. Step Stool writes, whatever Phil's eating, drinking, and doing, I'll have what he's having. Okay, nice rip on When Harry Met Sally there, Step Stool. The dude is truly an inspiration. Phil, I salute you in your unquenchable spirit. Can't add anything to that except amen to that. Phil's amazing. Lifted my spirits for sure. Okay, here's another email from Bundalinga. Subject line, today's show. Well, that's not very helpful. All right. I listened to your show today. Actually, I listened to it twice. All right. Yes. the first time, I kind of felt like it was a couple of old guys trading war stories about their injuries and bragging about what I can't say this word, what blankety blanks they are. But I'm glad I listened to it a second time. Yeah, me too. My first impression was wrong. Oh, okay. On the second listen, I heard pain, fear, and uncertainty, but I also heard courage, determination, and positivity. Wow, okay. Great. See how multi-layered and deep this show is. Essentially, I heard the human spirit. I wonder what I will hear if I listen to it a third time. Oh, I don't know, but do it. Yes, everybody should listen to every show at least two or three times. Do it. Do it. Bundalinga, life can change in the blink of an eye. Phil and I both know that now. And Phil is a pretty amazing person, and I came away from the show inspired to work harder on my own rehabilitation, to work harder to support others, and to work harder to just appreciate, dot, dot, dot. Just appreciate. Okay, 1 minute. Let's see. This one's from Brenda Unfiltered 37, Coastside Country. Okay. If this show had a marketing department, you would get yourself hooked up with Coastside Country and have them be the dance troupe for the show. You've got live audience, yeah? Have them dancers out entertaining the crowd and whipping us some hoorah. Every single social media post, commercial, and other of those adverts you do should all feature them folks doing their thing. Okay, I guess I like the idea, but I'm not sure how a dance troupe translates to broadcast radio. but per that, Coastside Country should have their own podcast for sure, with like the video thing, and they could do some, you know, maybe it's some YouTube channel. I'm thinking, yeah. I don't know, something where they can show them dancing, give some instruction. Radio though, all you would hear would be like, you know,
that is awful.
Right, exactly. They're dancing. Can't you picture them dancing in your minds? All right. Commercial. We have to go to commercial. Okay. We'll be right back talking to Sarah Lomax of Coastside Community Orchestra right after these messages.
This is community radio for the Coastside. 100.9 Coastal Windage is brought to you by Cameron's Restaurant and Pub in Half Moon Bay. Come for the food, stay for the fun. That's Cameron's Restaurant and Pub on Highway 1 in Half Moon Bay.
Hi, this is Jay Michaels. Make sure to join me along with Stan Warren Luttrell after Coastal Windage. We'll get a look at today in history and a brand new forgotten find. Coming up at 10 a.m. from 100.9 FM KHMB.
And we're back. Okay, this is Coastal Windage, the talk of the coast. This is Ruben. I'm here with Crystalline. And today we have Sarah Lomax, co-founder and assistant conductor of the Coastside Community Orchestra. All right, Sarah, Greetings. Welcome. Thank you
for being here. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, of course. Now, I'm just going to be totally honest, Sarah. Until orchestra member Mari Holcomb told me about the orchestra, literally like a couple of months ago at Pumpkin Festival, I did not even know the Coast Side had a performing orchestra.
What a shame. That is a point of concern for me and the members of our orchestra and our board, is to create more visibility in the community. We've been around for 43 years. We were founded in 1983. In fact, we celebrated, had a very nice celebration of our 40th Ruby Jubilee concert a few years ago. And if I may talk a little bit about the inception of the orchestra, how it was created.
You may.
Okay. Tom, for anybody who was around during the 70s or 80s, you may very well remember Tom McCarthy, who was a pastor at the Methodist Church. And he reached out to some music, local music teachers, and I was included, fortunate to be included in that. And the other person, people were Claudine Schwartzmenton, who had a violin school at the time in El Granada, and Carol Tillotson, who had an early childhood music education program. And we came together at the Methodist Church, and we concocted the idea that we could possibly create an orchestra, as humble as it was. And we met, our first meetings were in the maybe eight people in the Sunday school room at the Methodist Church. And at that point, we started to grow. And who would we go to for a conductor? Well, we looked to our local schools. And Robert Smith, who is a longtime music educator on the Coast Side here, was the conductor for our orchestra when we were large enough to be conducted. And also we tapped into the high school band director, Bill McSims, and he was the conductor for the first few years. They both, and Robert, ended up serving 26 years as conductor, total volunteer work here, as a conductor for the orchestra, and just retired about 3 years ago. And pleased to have him and his contribution to the orchestra. So we started off small, and we have grown, and we are now about 40 members large, nonprofit. Our season consists of two concerts, one in the fall and one in the spring, full orchestra concerts. And then we also have upcoming, and I would like to pitch this, we have members of our orchestra are going to be performing at chamber music performance at the Methodist Church February 7th at 2 o'clock. And we will have a variety of things on that program.
Okay, well, let's talk about that show. So is there a charge, tickets to get in? What's the admission charge?
Well, first of all, I'd like for you to know that it is a benefit concert to fulfill one of our mission statements, and that is to reach out to our public and private school students here on the Coast Side. And we have been fostering and nurturing different funding for them for various things, college scholarships, purchasing instruments for schools, providing scholarships for extended study with music lessons. We've been doing that since the inception of the orchestra. So this particular concert will be a benefit concert, and we're asking for a suggested donation of $15 and more is fine to support this part of our budget, because we feel that awareness from our young people on the Coast Side is very important.
And can I put a plug in for that as someone who was a beneficiary of a donated instrument? So when I was in fourth and fifth grade, I played the alto saxophone, was as big
wow.
as I was. And we couldn't afford a saxophone. And so somebody had donated one to our school, Valhalla Elementary. And so that's what I covered in. The case was covered in duct tape, and it was exactly what you would expect from a, you know, loved saxophone. But yeah, I would have never had those 2 years in band had I not been able to receive a donated instrument.
All right, sensitive question, Sarah.
Yes.
But it goes to this discussion of instruments for young people and music, especially, I'll just say, classical instruments, or, you know, like, I include
acoustical.
Orchestral instruments, right? Okay. What is the average age of the 40 members of your orchestra? I mean, again, like, okay. I'm, this isn't a, you know, criticism. It's a concern.
It is a concern. And that, or I'd say the average age is probably 65. And it is a of a concern that we are having to, that we are really pounding the pavement to find, for instance, more string players. And it is in my awareness that California public schools have not had string programs for many, many years. So there's no one coming up through the ranks to fill these positions. So I would support, and as I said, I was 33 years in California public schools. And my first teaching job actually was in 1971, right here on the coast side, which is how I ended up here from a little town in Missouri. I ended up...
Where was that? A little town where?
In Missouri.
Huh, okay. All right, anyways.
So, anyway, I took my first teaching job at El Granada and Fairlawn View in instrumental music, and then later the next year I moved on to Cunha, and I shared that job with Robert Smith at the time, and he was my mentor in my beginning years. But anyway, I went on to other districts, because the program had been severely cut due to Prop 13. The instrumental music program got severely cut. And we had quite a good program in 71. We had a string program. We had a full orchestra with fifth grade string and wind players. And unfortunately, that cannot be recouped. And I think California budgeting is not allowed for fine arts education as it should. And does in other states.
And I just want to note that music in schools, I think, is important also because, you know, not every kid is athletic, but being a part of the band or the orchestra still teaches teamwork because you have to work together, and same with choir. And it also, it's something that you start and you have to, like, stick with it, even if it's just for that 1 year, but that also teaches some very good skills. So it's really unfortunate that music and those parts of the curriculum tend to give way to, or tend to be the first that are kind of shut down and let go.
Tend to be? Are.
Yes.
First thing that gets X out is the arts.
Yeah.
Right.
You know,
right.
Because ain't nobody, ain't no $500 billion art company over the hill, you know, making art or even music.
That's right.
Right.
The visual and performing arts take the hit first. Then school counseling takes a hit. That's sort of been the pattern. But you're right about students and music. I had so many students over the years and some successful band programs I'm really proud of. But a lot of those students were kids that couldn't get on a sports team, or they maybe weren't the best academically, but they found a love with music, and it really gave them that place to have teamwork with other students and acceptance, and it was really inspirational to see that.
And it can help with self-esteem and, you know, people who have, like, stage fright. Like, if you have stage fright and you can play an instrument, like, it can help you kind of get over that because you don't have to speak, you know, you can get out in front of people.
Whenever I watch a live performance of music, since I've already expressed I have no musical ability, I'm filled with anxiety for the musicians. Because having played music in the past very poorly, constantly playing the wrong note or doing it wrong, and so that's all I can ever think about when I'm walking. How can they remember all these notes? And I'm just so worried that somebody's going to play a wrong note, or when they hit a break or the end, that they'll be like me at the end, like playing like three extra notes. Bleep, bleep, wah. Oh, whoops, we're done? Oh, okay.
It becomes muscle memory.
Then they have to improvise. You know, that word came up earlier, didn't it? It's okay to play wrong notes. I think that's something we need to teach. Mm-hmm. And I think it's okay to play wrong notes and many times the musician is the only one that knows they're wrong.
Okay, I do. So I coach basketball, and I do provide some of the one thing that I learned from my brief musical history, apply it to basketball. A lot of times the kids will be dribbling the ball, and they'll get close to the basket, and they'll travel, which means they don't dribble, and they'll just stop and turn around and go, oh, I messed up, and start walking away. I'm like, don't stop. Right. Just keep going. Just like, who here plays a musical instrument? Does your music teacher, if you make a mistake, do they say, stop, start over? Sometimes, but usually they say, play through it. And so I've taken that. That's what I learned from
music. Good for you.
Play through it. Okay, so but coming back to this, because it's very troubling to me that the age of the orchestra is, you know, it's graying. What about the age of the audience? Now, I imagine that there a lot of parents bring their kids, but when you look out at the audience, oh, here we go. Sarah, bringing in the calls. Okay,
bring it on.
We've got a caller on the line. This is Ruben and Crystal with Sarah Lomax from the Coastside Community Orchestra. Who have we got on the phone this morning? Hello.
No.
Okay. Talk about see, there we go. Okay. So what about people that come to the shows? Is it mostly older folks? Or do you see... Okay, here's the demographic that tells me. Parents are going to bring their little kids. Oh, you know, you should get little Timmy. Like, you know, look at, here's music. We want you to play an instrument. And older folks, adults, who have grown to like the music. How many teenagers are willfully coming to your show?
Well, probably not as, definitely not as many as we would like. And we are thinking in terms of the kind of programming that we can do to draw in families. We are reaching out, just so you know, that we are reaching out, and I'm kind of responsible for putting this together, but we are going out to the schools, the orchestra is. We're going out to four of the local schools on the coast side in the first week of March, and we're a contingency of about 12 orchestra musicians from violin down to tuba. And we are going to do a presentation for the students. And unfortunately, because they do not in the elementary schools have an instrumental music program, hopefully they will be inspired to pick up an instrument when they go to CUNA or the middle school that they will be attending, which is usually where that music is offered, instrumental music is offered. So we're trying to reach out to young people and also thinking in terms of changing our programming to family-friendly concerts.
So, go ahead.
I feel like two things that may have voted in your guys' favor is the show Bridgerton, and they've taken all kinds of pop songs or groups. Mm-hmm. Have taken all kinds of pop songs and made orchestra versions of them. Almost everybody I know listens to those. Like, especially if you need, like, just background music and stuff like that. So it's not necessarily the classics or the greats, but, you know, right. A little Taylor Swift in an orchestra version is actually quite fun. And
I mean, one of my favorite songs is A Fifth of Beethoven on the Saturday Night Fever album. That song's awesome.
You'll have to come April 11th because we're playing the real Beethoven.
I mean, I don't know if I like the real Beethoven as much as the disco Beethoven.
If I can answer Crystal's question, you know, I have found in public schools that, yes, we do try to meet them on their level. And I think playing music is that's satisfying to them and familiar to them is important. But I think it's also important, just as important or maybe more important, that we elevate their listening skills, too. Because, Reuben, who knows, if you had really studied or listened at length to Beethoven's Fifth, you might really prefer it to the Fifth of Beethoven or whatever.
Well, I will say this, Sarah. I can't play music, but my dad loved big band. Okay, so with, you know, which is not a classical orchestra, but an orchestra that could have 20 instruments in it. And he would be listening to these records all the time, and he would kind of quiz me, like, what's that instrument? And so in that sense, like, I can kind of pick out these different instruments and know that, oh, that's, you know, that's a trombone, or that's a, you know, it's trumpets, or the obvious ones, drums. I can usually pick those out.
Good, good, good.
Yeah.
I love a banjo.
But so that kind of like being able to like identify and hear. So here's an idea that you and I were talking about before the show, Sarah, as a way to like refresh interest in this type of music. My wife and son and I were trying to think of a present, gift, birthday present for my mom, who recently celebrated her birthday. Happy birthday, Mom. And, you know, she's been around a while, so she's got everything she needs. You know, what are we going to buy her? So we were really scratching our heads. So I can remember as a kid growing up in San Diego that our school, again, pre-Prop 13, our elementary school had a program where once a year they would take kids down to the San Diego Symphony Orchestra, and we'd go to the orchestra hall and hear a full symphony. So I thought, all right, well, let's check that out, see what they've got. So we bought her tickets for the San Diego Symphony Orchestra doing Beyonce songs. And so maybe that's something that the community orchestra could look at. You know, we just heard on the intro to the show, the Cameron's thing, mm-hmm. they've got the, you know, the beginning of All You Need Is Love, or whatever the Beatles song is that has the, you know, has like an orchestra playing at the beginning. Beatles songs or Beyonce songs or something that connect the kids with the classical instruments.
Absolutely. And I think that a varied program is really important because you can pull their attention in, but if we don't play other things, they have the opportunity to hear that music all the time. All they have to do is turn on their radio, or their listen to their personal music, or stream it. But when can they hear? How often do they hear a live classical orchestra playing the most exciting music you've ever heard? And if we don't introduce them to that, they could spend their lifetime never knowing, and so will their kids, and so will their kids. And this is why we have a decline in what I feel is a really well-rounded young people as far as their musical taste.
But I think there needs to be a middle ground, though, like bring them in with the cookie and then feed
them
the carrot.
Sure, exactly, and that's what I'm saying.
My most favorite thing when I played the saxophone was we played Tequila.
Oh, yeah.
And, like, you know, most people will associate that with Pee Wee Herman.
Yes.
But I got to play that over the loudspeaker of the school to the entire school.
Wow.
And, but, yeah. Like, that's, you know, that made it fun. But then we also played all the, you know, the
right.
good, the classic ones and the good ones.
And I know in picking literature for students when I was teaching that I tried to round it out. And, you know, don't sell kids short. They really love good classical literature too. When they, it's kind of fun to watch them light up. But you're right, you have to draw them in with a cookie, as you say. But they really do have they really do appreciate and find the beauty in and good music too.
In thinking of family friendly, and I don't have kids, so this is actually more geared towards me. But like, and this may sound absurd. But if you guys did a concert that was like the classic, I don't know what the licensing is, classic Disney songs the little kids
sure.
could sing along with, like
Frozen.
Like I would go Little Mermaid.
Sure.
I could do an Ursula, let me tell you. like that would be so
good.
Let's
have it.
I would go to that alone, let alone having little kids.
Oh, sure.
All right, and it sounds like Sarah, you're just pulling in the listeners and the callers.
Right.
We've got another phone call. Who have we got on the phone this morning?
Good morning. It's Julie Roscoff Mel. How are you?
Julie Mel, your ears must be burning. We mentioned you earlier on the show.
You did.
Of course we did. With artists who are doing beautiful things here on the coast side. Yes.
Aw, well, thanks for thinking of me.
I just started
listening and heard Sarah, and just wanted to call in and say hello.
Hello, Julie.
Hi. We partnered with the Coastside Community Orchestra 2 years ago to bring a fabulous animation to the Coastside kids, third and fourth graders, some fifth graders. And it was an animation by Mason Bates, followed by a little performance by some of the musicians and their instruments to introduce the kids them live after seeing the animation. And we're going to be doing that again. Hopefully we'll get the Coastside Community Orchestra to join us again. But we plan to take that film and tour with it. So
it was a lot of
greater
fun.
Greater appreciation of
that was
music
a lot
and
of
symphony.
Fun we had. We figure we saw over two assemblies. We saw over 700 students on the Coastside.
Yeah.
They were bussed in, and Julie had it all set up for showing the film, and then we demonstrated the instruments after the film, and it was a lot of fun. We'd like to do that again next year.
It was a great program. Yeah, I thought it was an important program, and people seemed to really appreciate it, and thankfully, because, you know, like you said, the budgeting's been cut, and the kids need music because for so many reasons. They need the culture, and they need the experience, and they need the cultural arts.
And it's really good for their little souls. Like, there's actual studies that show, like, if you could be having, like, a very, very dumpy day, and you put on some music that, like, makes you kind of bop around, maybe sing along, like, it gets all the right juices flowing.
This is what I'm saying. Put on a fifth of Beethoven, like, you will not be tapping your toes and, like, boogieing in the car.
Yeah.
Right? Am I right? Yes.
It's true. Sarah, thank you for all you do.
Absolutely. Thank you, Julie.
Yeah, good to hear your voice, and thanks, Coastal Windage. It's nice to hear you all.
We'll get something going for next year.
Excellent. All right. Talk to you soon.
Thank you, Julie. Thank you. Okay, so let's get real here.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about trying to bring in the next generation of music appreciators and players, but the dark cloud looming over this, besides the budget cloud and the money cloud, is the technology cloud. And I say that because with AI, with the cult of technology that we live in, photography, writing, all of the arts are being heavily, graphic design, heavily impacted by technology, AI, and code, mm-hmm. including music making, starting with the, what was it, the Apple had, that app that they had, that they came out with like 15 years ago to, that you could,
what, the iPod?
No, the app that they have on the...
GarageBand.
Where, like, you know, like, people are making music without ever touching a musical instrument now. And I just feel like the cult of technology we live in, that's what kids are interested in, is the technology part of it. How do you connect with them to get them away from a screen, away from the code, away from the technology, and touching a physical thing that they have to manipulate with their mind and their fingers and their breath to create a sound? How do you attract them to that when everything in the world right now is about code?
Right. I understand what you're saying, but I must have started thousands of kids on instruments. I start them in the fourth grade and take them to the eighth grade. And to watch them light up when they made their first mouthpiece sound, as awful as that could be, I have to say that there's a sense of pride that really comes from this manipulation of an instrument and to play, and they can pick their song. You know, they can figure it out. And as a teacher, of course, we'd supply them with a notation or let them just figure it out, you know. But just learning to get around on an instrument was just inspirational. And I just saw too many, like I said, I saw too many kids light up. And just, I don't think that's ever going to go away.
I think there has to be a priority to get it back in schools. Because, or parents making it an after school type situation. It's just, it's going to take people to get, because kids are not necessarily going to pick, you know, kids, they want to go out, they want to play, they want to do, like, they have, you know, their minds are only expanded when they're given the opportunity to expand and are kind of ushered in that direction.
I mean, I agree with that, and I mean, I do agree with that, and I want to believe in that, and yet, like, here's a problem that we have on the coast side with regard to children and music, or anybody in music. There's not a music store on the coast side. If I need a clarinet reed, I can't. There's nowhere to go here to get that. There's no store on Main Street. Talking about this ordinance about cleaning up Main Street or the types of business. If there was a music shop on Main Street and kids walking to school every day and there's trumpets and guitars hanging from a big window in a store on Main Street, kids might be like, oh, what's this? Let's, you know, this looks cool. Let me go in and try the drums, you know, that type of thing. But there's no music store. And so there's no visibility on that. There's no budget for music. I think Cunha has music and the high school has music, but I've watched that band at the high school shrink and shrink and shrink and shrink. And I think we have a real, I want to believe, but look at who the people in the room here, you know, our collective ages are up there. Mm-hmm. And I know, so I was like, talk.
Sorry, your kids.
talk about yourself, old man. But I worry that we're moving between technology and the lack of access here on the coast side specifically. Even you go over the hill, there's not music stores like there used to be where you...
Mm-hmm. I used to... So when I first got this job and I had to commute from Monterey daily, it would take me, you know, through Santa Cruz. And I just used to be in such shock, and hopefully it's still there. I want to say it was called Sylvan or something like that, but there was a music shop with the instruments hanging in the window and the whole thing on that main road in Santa Cruz, and you know, every time I would drive by it, I'd be like, good for you, like, you know, defying the odds.
Now, Sarah, so speaking of that, though, I have seen some posts on Nextdoor. It seems like there's a guy in town that is a, like, works on violins,
right,
or has a violin repair shop.
Violin shop, Spanish Town.
Yeah, but
David Ken. I've talked with him.
Is he part of the orchestra? Is he affiliated with you?
He's kind of new on the coast side, and he has come in and played with us a couple of times.
So, but it's not like a music shop where he's got a variety of, it's more of a violin repair place, which is an odd niche, but it's pretty cool. And I appreciate his posts on Nextdoor where he's describing these instruments and what he's, you know, he's a craftsman in the sense of, like, being able to repair a musical instrument, especially violins. It could be 100 years old or 200 years
could
old.
Could I just, into the last minute, I see we have 1 minute, could I just make a pitch?
Please do.
Okay, please. We would love to see you at our concerts, and bring your children. It is free always to students. And I would ask you to mark your calendars on Saturday, February 7th at 2 o'clock at the Methodist Church. We will be having a chamber music program presented by about 14 members of the orchestra playing in small groups. And then on April 11th, we have a very exciting concert at the IDES Hall at 7:30. It would be a Saturday night, 7:30, and the very elegant, I don't know if you've seen that hall, IDES Hall. And we would like to see you April 11th at that concert. And again, students are free.
The acoustics in there must be awesome.
They are. It's just such a lovely space.
I don't think I've seen an event in the IDES.
What?
No.
We're going to see it. You're going to hear Beethoven's Fifth the right way.
Okay. April 11th. Okay. On that. All right. Second engineer Noah is giving me the finger. So that means we have 1 minute. So I want to let people know next week, February 6th, we have Mike Kahn. He is the creator of Explore Local Nature. We've been talking about Brooks Falls in the waterfall in Pacifica that I had no idea about. Well, guess what? Mike knows about it. Mike knows about lots of hikes and other nature places here on the coastside and the peninsula and the Bay Area. So we're going to have Mike on next week. Thank you to Michelle Dragony for hooking us up with that. And then, as I mentioned, on February 13th, we're going to have Melinda McNaughton from El Granada Advocates and the Xerxes Foundation to talk about monarch butterflies, pesticides, and more. If you would like to be on this show, or you know how somebody would, send us an email to coastalwindage@gmail.com. This is your community radio station and your community live call-in talk radio show. love doing it for the community, love being a part of this community. I have people like Sarah Lomax, who provides artistic beauty to this community, our beautiful Coastside community. Thank you, Sarah, for being
here
today.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you, callers. Crystalline, as always.
Thank you.
Noah, Frank, and our viewers in the Elevated Viewing Gallery, and, of course, the interns. Thank you very much for listening. We'll be back next week at 9 a.m. on Friday. Coastal Windage, the talk of the coast.